23228 Real 10.
Professor Hugh de Wardener, Real 10.
And we then left, and I imagine we went by train, I can't remember the trip, to what I think was called Nakompatom. Nakompatom or Nakomnayuk, I can't remember what it is, but it was an airport, an aerodrome, that was finishing being built well to the east of Bangkok, surrounded by hills, in which we discovered later were planted the SAS, but we didn't know this. It was a biggish camp, and I do remember it for one reason, that I had my one and only operation there. We had to walk quite a long distance from wherever the railway took us to the camp. And I eventually found myself walking barefooted, I remember that. And that was not very pleasant. And I got gross bruises in my feet, and one of the bruises became septic, so that I had an abscess under the plantar fascia. The plantar fascia is a piece of fibrous tissue underneath your foot. And if you have an abscess on the outside of that, that's not too bad. But if you have an abscess on the below that, underneath that, then that's terrible, because the tension builds up, is enormous. There's nothing much to see, the little swelling. And that, I remember that was very, very painful. And somebody said, well, you better have that opened up. And then thank God there was some chloroform. And I remember thinking that I had heard that chloroform was the worst anesthetic you could have, because it caused sudden death in a certain percentage of the people. Which it does. It does. Anyhow, I was only too glad to go to sleep, get rid of this pain. I woke up, of course, without it, which was lovely. Otherwise, I don't remember much about that camp until it's in that camp that we hear, again from the wireless, that the atomic bomb had fallen. And I remember hearing this news with most grave misgivings. I realized, of course, that it meant that we were free, we'd won the war. But I kept thinking, as you sow, so shall you reap. and I didn't like this, I must admit.
You obviously appreciated the implications.
Oh, yes, yes. Of course, later on, it was even graver than I thought. There had been trenches built around the camp. And the trenches, apparently, were for bumping us off the whole POW camp if the British attacked across the Bay of Bengal into Burma, which they were on the point of doing. But the atom bomb prevented it. So we saved, it saved a lot of lives, that atom bomb, though it killed a lot of people. It saved a lot of others. The jubilation, of course, was phenomenal. The nips were very reasonable. We were told by, very quickly, it's difficult to, one can only remember certain things. It's difficult to, not in a diary sense at all. I remember the wireless operator that we got from the SAS was parachuted in, and he went straight through one of the huts, and he was petrified of the whole business, I remember. He didn't like the job, but it was very well organized. They dropped whoever was in charge of the POW situation, and I imagine the SAS had little to do with it at the beginning. They dropped a wireless into each radio operator in each camp. Then they could organize whatever happened straight away. And So he was quite exciting when he arrived, but he also, the plane that brought him was a Dakota. Everything was a Dakota in those days. And not only did it drop him, but it dropped us parcels. And that was terribly moving. Terribly moving. There was soap. Soap. And and there were perfectly ordinary bits of soap. Lux, you know, palm olive. And the smell was so wonderful. The wonderful smell of palm olive. And... But the fact that they were dropping them onto us, we were somehow or other, people cared. People cared, you know. And that was very, very interesting. And that hung on again. I'll tell you later as we go home. But there's this feeling, it sort of really makes you break down. Not that you thought that they weren't caring. The rest of the time, it wasn't as if you'd suddenly realize, oh, they do care. No, it's not like that. But anyhow, they also dropped stuff called penicillin. And I knew what it was, because I had read one of the last BMJs that I had read. There was an editorial in it about some substance which they had grown, a mold, surrounding which something came out of the mold and destroyed staphylococci. I remember reading this with the greatest interest 3.5 years before. So when they brought this, I imagined it was this, but I didn't know quite how to use it. It was a nasty brown concoction which you injected in those days. Rather painful. But they didn't say what to use it for. They just thought everybody knew. It was so famous. And they sent us a lot of other drugs and vitamin tablets and bandages and so on. And we then put on a show which Dudley Gottler wrote. And it was very funny. I think it was called Hold That Tie. I'm not certain. And have I told you about this before? No. I was involved in the show. One of my main parts was in a small sketch of Dudley's called The Warrior's Return. And he arrives back. This is a POW arriving back at home. And it's obviously, there's a bare stage. And it's obvious that he's a POW arriving home. And he's waiting and for his wife to turn up. Now, for lavatory paper, we always use banana leaves. He tore off. And he's wandering about waiting, and there's a plant, Aspidistra. As he goes past the Aspidistra, he tears the leaf off, puts it in his pocket. Well, the laughter went on. It was the longest laugh I have ever heard, because, of course, this is the way to make people laugh. Make them about them. Make about they something they recognize, you know. I was, as you will hear, I was looking through the back of the peephole, because I was the baby's voice in the middle of his doing this, walking about. Suddenly there's a voice of a baby crying. Now, he's been away 3.5 years, you see. And I was the baby's voice. Well, of course, that produced a pretty good laugh, you see, which nobody who wasn't there would believe, would they? No, of course not. You've got to be somewhere to know what happened. Enormous laugh. And the wife comes in and tries to explain about the baby, and so that was the thing. It lasted, I think, 5.5 minutes, this skit, and playing time was about 10 because of the laughter. It was marvelous. He had a great facility, Dudley, for writing these things. And I can't remember what the other bits were. That was the highlight, as far as I was concerned, with that show. Now, while I was there, somebody arrived with a message for me that my papers have been dug up at Chiang Kai and have been taken to Bangkok, and they are at the Chulalongkorn Kong Hospital, and would I make my way there as soon as possible? Forthwith, in the army way. So I go to the colonel. I say, look, I've got to... Right, off you go. And there was, by this time, there was the SAS were using jeeps and were coming to and fro. And so I was put on a jeep with one of these SAS people. And he was a remarkable fellow, I'll never forget, a major. Bare to the waist, huge crucifix hanging down, three revolvers, I think, two daggers. And every time he looked at a nip, it was all he could do not to kill him. And we went sailing down to Bangkok. Hilarious journey, I must admit. Every time we saw a nip, he bowed low. And we went sailing on. And we arrived, and I went to the Chulalongkorn Hospital, where I found my notes. And this was going to be the hospital, the where some of our people were going to be evacuated to, which was useful. So I was sort of ahead of the game, and there was a padre there already, whom I vaguely knew. And he said, would you like a beer? I said, yes. He said, there's one in the fridge. I opened the fridge, and there they were, Thai beer. Well, now, I'm not a great beer drinker. I don't drink very much, but cold drink of beer. It was marvelous. It was one of the highlights. Well, gradually, other doctors came to Chulalongkorn Hospital, and we had a few patients. Can you turn the machine off for a second? Right. There amongst the people that we joined up with was a very famous ex-White Russian, well, I suppose his parents were White Russian, doctors called Stroganov, whom I had known on and off in the camps. He was a wonderful character, very solidly built. He always looked like a Christmas tree. He had so many things hanging from him, frying pans and kettles and haversacks. Very cheerful always, very, very full of beans. And he turned up. And he immediately wanted to go to a whorehouse. And we said, well, all right, we'll accompany you. But apparently, prostitutes Bangkok only worked during the day, not at night. So we hired a bus, and about six of us went off to this whorehouse. And my little girl was a sweet little Thai girl who, in the middle of the performance, got acute abdominal pain. And I had to change into Dr. Mose. And she had acute appendix. So I found myself putting my trousers on, putting her in the bus, and taking her to the hospital. So it was just as well we went, really, because she meant she was treated quickly and properly. Yes. So that was one of the... Oh. Yes, I don't remember much about that stay there, except for certain incidents. There are two, or three. One was that we met two doctors called Ping and Pong. You'd never believe it. And they were insistent that I join them in their practice and didn't go back to England. And I must say, I was terribly tempted. Terribly tempted. Mainly, I have to say, because of the girls. The women are so beautiful, the young Siamese women, and their femininity passes all other femininities. They are so graceful. The Burmese are the same. But the Thai women, beautiful. Anyhow, it took better sense, but so I turned down Ping and Pong, but I would have made a fortune. Because there had been several white doctors before the war, and they had either left, died, or been decimated. Anyhow, there were none left. So this would have been the first European doctor in Bangkok. So it would have been, but it would have been private medicine. I can't stand private medicine, for a start. So I think that put me off more than anything else. The other thing was that we were invited, a friend of mine called Peter Brookman, whom I think I've mentioned before, were invited to dinner with the head of the Pasteur Institute there. And it was a beautiful dinner. And the highlight for me was the horror of doing something terrible. There was a lovely white tablecloth. And there was silver. And there were lovely bits of pottery we ate on, plates. And being in Siam, you had your meat in a little plate beside, and you had your rice on the main plate. So that the meat had to be transported from the little plate to the big plate. And as I did so, one of the pieces of meat fell on the tablecloth. And I can't tell you how upset I felt. It was awful. This beautiful white tablecloth, which I was so admiring and so loving, was suddenly desecrated by me. And I've never forgotten it. I was bowled over by this incident, totally. Couldn't talk. So that was they were very kind. And then another time we went into Bangkok and had dinner. I think it was some journalists, I'm not certain who they were. Peter Brookman was the commercial bloke who organized all these things. And that was fun, because we went to a Chinese place, and a big round table, and we all sat, and I remember the sucking pig that came, sat in the middle of the table, the skin of which had been cut into little squares, and we each took a little square or two, and then the sucking pig disappeared, and about 2 hours later came back in bits, which we ate. And there were also places, wooden sort of beds around the outside of this huge room with porcelain headrests for those who during the meal felt a little rest would do them good. The meal went on for hours. It was very good. I loved that sort of meal because you ate not much but continuously. So you could go on 4 or 5 hours without really feeling full, but enjoying the food all the time. And, of course, the wine. It was a very civilized way. And, of course, Chinese have round tables. And round tables are so much more civilized than rectangular tables. Rectangular tables, you break up into little parties. Whereas a round table, you're all part of the same party. So those were my incidents. We went out with some princesses, I remember, took us out. I don't know how they came. They took out, and it was remarkable how beautiful their English was. They spoke English beautifully. They knew their Shakespeare and their Chaucer. They were extremely gracious, very civilized, very pleasant, courteous, and very beautiful. Well, finally, we were put into aeroplanes, Dakotas, and had to fly over where we had been building the railway. And we looked down onto the railway tracing, some of it. And I'm told one Dakota crashed into the jungle carrying POWs. That must have been terrible. One never hears about these things, but I mean, I don't think much was made of it, but I'm told. And we got to Rangoon. And here we met our proper medical services, so to speak. And it was fascinating meeting white women who had green legs because they were on atabrine. Everybody was on atabrine, which is a substance to prevent, at that time, to prevent malaria. But it settles in the skin. And I must admit, made everybody green, but green legs were most unpleasant. So we weren't as enamored with them as we thought we might have been.
Yes, and who were these women?
Nurses, that's right, yes, the nurses.
Did you meet any of the women, they were known as the Wasbys, who were serving the troops from canteens?
No, I don't remember, I don't think so. We met Lady Mountbatten, she came. She was very sweet. And I can't remember where we saw her. I don't believe we saw her in the camps. No, I think it was at Rangoon. She chatted away. Sort of neurotic lady. Sort of quick movements of the hands, you know. But doing well. I don't remember much of the stay. I think they were very worried about... I mean, obviously, you could divide us into two lots, or three lots, I suppose. There were the obviously very sick, who were wasted away, who needed a lot of treatment and rehabilitation. Then at the other end, there were people like doctors who weren't at all ill. And however much weight we may have lost, however much we'd had malaria, however much dysentery we had, we were, unless we were having an acute phase of one of these... well, and we were told to be careful about what we ate. Well, we'd just been having a lovely time in Bangkok, eating vast amounts of food.
Yes, I was wondering about that, you know, how you could cope with the food, having lived on such, you know,
well, yes, but we always had lots, of rice.
Did you?
Well, there was always lots of rice. After all, rice, Burma was a rice exporting country. I'm sorry, Burma was, and I think so Thailand too. Exporting. There was plenty of rice. We didn't suffer from undernutrition, we suffered from malnutrition. I think I mentioned this before, it was the lack of vitamins, the lack of protein. That's what we... But bulk, plenty of bulk.
With the rice, would it have been polished rice, or did you...
It was a mixture. It was pretty... It was not beautifully white, no.
So it was better.
But it wasn't too
really
bad. It wasn't too bad. Yes, quite.
You know, more nutritious.
Yes, but I don't know how much of it was the sweepings, too. Yes, you know, what's at the bottom of the pile. But on the whole, in fact, I think a lot of people like myself, but I certainly got to like rice so much that I missed it. I wanted it. When I came home, I wanted rice. And if ever since, if we have a rice dish, I'm appalled by the helping. It's so little. To me, rice is something that you eat in bulk. You know, I love it. In fact, those people at the beginning in Singapore who said they couldn't eat rice, they died. Because that's all there was. If you couldn't eat rice, that was it. It was a silly position to take.
Did many take that position?
No. But there were some. And of course, the cooks hadn't learned how to cook the rice properly. It was it tended to be wet and rather sort of... I mean, later on, we could... even I could cook beautiful rice, or, you know, dry, beautiful rice. In a canteen, I could do it in a mess tin. I could cook rice. And so we left Rangoon. I can't remember much happening in Rangoon, but waiting to get on the boat.
What sort of state was Rangoon in? You know, I wonder where you stayed. And
I don't know where we stayed. We must have stayed in some encampment outside it. We didn't go into the town.
Were you well looked after there?
Very well, yes. Very well, yes. Oh, very well. I mean, from the time the war was over, we felt very privileged. Everybody looked after us. In fact, in Rangoon, I remember thinking, this is silly, we're not that ill. But of course, we weren't. There were others, vast numbers who were very ill.
Yes.
And you had to choose between.
Did you get an idea of how people did regard? Were they surprised to see the state of the POWs? You know, the skeletal state of a lot of you.
I don't know. I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt whether they'd be surprised. By that time, you know, after all, airplanes had been flying over our camps and waving at us. I mean, bombing us originally. I mean, bombing the railway and so on. They had pretty good... I imagine they must have taken photographs of the camps. I don't know.
Were you given clothing in the parcels? You know, the medicines and the food that was dropped.
It's terrible to say. I don't remember about the clothing. It's obviously... I don't pay much attention to clothing. But I don't remember. We were presumably given some proper clothes, yes. Because what we wore as POWs was what was known as Jap happies. you know what a Jap happy is? It's a piece of cloth about 3 or 4 inches wide and about, 4 feet long. And it's sewn onto a piece of string. And you tie this piece of string around you and do it up at the front. And the cloth is at the back and then comes through to the front, comes through this over the string and then hangs down. Now, as soon as you can recognize it then. And these were known as Jap happies. I don't know why. Because the Nips wore them. I mean, this was a very well... I mean, a Nip having a shower or a Nip undressed wears that. So it's a very useful thing in hot weather. And as regards shoes, we were very lucky. We had Javanese people with us, and they could fashion sandals. And I must say, I had a pair of beautiful sandals made, which otherwise one walked barefooted a lot of the time. It taught you, walking barefooted, taught you to look at the ground when you walk, because a little root sticking up, or ants... Or something. You look at the ground when you walk. You way ahead. You don't look down at your feet. You look about 10 or 20 feet ahead, but you look at the ground all the time. And but did we have any? Obviously, we must have been given some clothes, but I don't remember what.
I suppose you would have had hats as well, you know, in the sunshine while you were in camp. Did you make hats?
No, we didn't seem to use hats, no. No, I think a lot of people who had to stay in the railway, who had to work on the railway, the lucky ones probably still had a hat of some sort. But as medical officers, I never wore a hat, no. But I was never exposed. I never had to be in the sun very long. We were a very privileged bunch. We get all the credit, and we had all the good times, really, that could be had. We did our... I've said it before, but it's so true. We were doing our job. And we didn't have to do the horrible work. So we were in shipped on the Ormerod, I think it was called. I think it was O-M-O-R-O-D. Ormerod. Small ship that took us all the way back to England. We first went to Colombo, and that was another sort of moving moment, because we went into, oh Lord, I've forgotten the name of the naval base at Colombo, but never mind, the big naval base. And there, a huge battleship, aircraft carrier, I don't know what, had huge sign across it saying, "Welcome home." Now, that's so Navy. The Navy is totally different from the other services. It's always courteous, always pleasant, civilized. And that made a great, great impression on me, I must admit. We sailed in, I was supposed to pick up supplies or something. And there was "Welcome home." And we met our colonel there. He was in Ceylon. And he knew that he'd heard that we were being... And that was rather sweet to meet him. Because I don't know why he hadn't... Now, I think he must have been the colonel. That's right, he had a game leg, so he didn't come out with us. The colonel, he was the colonel that we'd had in Macclesfield and in England. Then we went on, and we went through the Suez Canal...